the most likely source of new disease is going to be from another animal. You know, we have no immunity to it because it's been in another animal that's transmitted. And so if we don't do anything about this, it's really a question of when, you know, the next thing happens.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. Today's conversation is with Peter Knights, the executive director of WildAid. Peter has been investigating and working to end illegal wildlife trafficking for the past 30 years. WildAid has been a massive force in the reduction of the demand for ivory, rhino horn, shark fins, and much other illegal wildlife for decades. WildAid's different from other conservation organizations because instead of focusing on fighting the supply side of the illegal wildlife trade, they work to reduce the demand. We know that COVID-19 most likely started at a wild animal market in Wuhan, China, and it was transmitted to a human from an animal, probably a pangolin. Wild animal markets are breeding grounds for diseases, and in order to stop the transmission of the diseases to humans, we need to shut down the markets. And if there's one upside coming from this pandemic, and I certainly hope that there's more than one, it's that wild animal markets have shut down in China, and hopefully many other countries will soon follow suit. There's still a lot of confusion surrounding the wild animal markets in China and elsewhere. So I asked Peter if he could explain. If you could just talk about a little bit about WildAid for people who don't know, and what is happening right now in terms of the global pandemic and the wildlife trade and what you do, how it all connects.
Well, I've been investigating and working on illegal wildlife trafficking for nearly 30 years now. And as part of that, I used to do undercover investigations going to places like these markets that you've seen in China. 25 years ago in Guangzhou in China, looking into rhino horn in these markets and seeing what are the dreadful conditions and the things that were happening to the animals then. And so WildAid is really quite unique because we focus on trying to stop the demand for endangered species products. So most organizations focusing on trying to protect the supply. And what we've said is you'll never succeed in doing that unless you can stop the demand for these products. So over the last 20 years now, it's our 20-year anniversary this year, we've been working on trying to educate and raise awareness to people, primarily in Asia, but in other parts of the world too, about endangered species trade and the fact that the purchasing is driving the whole thing. And so if people stop buying the products, then the poachers won't go out and poach. They'll go and do something else.
I saw that you had a campaign going with the pangolins and the mask and Jay Chow. That was years ago, right, that you did that?
5 years ago we did that, yes. So, I mean, it really a precursor to these days where the gentleman in Jay Chow is a very famous Asian musician. We use musicians and actors, people like Jackie Chan, Yao Ming, have been leading our campaigns over the years. And in that case, behind Jay Chow, there was somebody pretending to eat a pangolin, and they put on the face mask, and they put on the surgical gloves, and they pick up their chopsticks. And it says, you know, if you're going to eat pangolin, you know, beware, it's a possibility of catching a new disease. Because we've been aware of these problems for a long, long time, and it was obviously very prophetic. It may turn out that it's not the pangolin that was the transmitter in this case. We don't know yet. But if it wasn't, it certainly could have been. And we know that pangolins do carry viruses, as we know, bats and other species. So, you know, people said, well, we don't absolutely 100% know it's pangolins. It's like, well, it could be next time. So nevertheless, this problem has to be dealt with. It's a major high risk for new disease introduction through wildlife trade, made particularly worse by things like deforestation, which opens up new areas of animals that previously haven't come into contact with human beings. And that is a big risk for new disease.
Right. And will you just tell us a little bit about what's happening right now in China? Because I think there's so many rumors and there's kind of a lot of fake news happening.
Yeah, there's always confusion around China, unfortunately. And sometimes it's because the government, when they make announcements, they're kind of ambiguous and not very clear. And we have to struggle sometimes to work out exactly what people are trying to say. And sometimes it's just misunderstanding. So, you know, people say these wet markets. Well, wet markets are just places where animals are sold, usually live. And that's a lot of the world gets their protein from wet markets. the problem that we've had in China and other places is where you mix the domesticated animals in with exotic animals. And that's where you get the really high risk of new disease introduction. And you've got many species together. So the Chinese government pretty quickly suspended all those markets and stopped all those markets and actually stopped the breeders as well, people that were breeding some of these animals, and basically closed them down. And I got a call yesterday saying, the poor breeders, now they have no income and they're in trouble. And it's like, yeah, the whole world's in trouble, guys. So let's get it into perspective. But they have been pretty strict in closing down those markets for wildlife. Now, they've reopened them now in some cases for the domesticated animals, the chickens and the ducks and things like that. But they have not reopened the wildlife markets. And they just published a list in China of animals that in the future will be allowed to be traded. So rather than having a great big long list of things that can't be traded, they have a very short list. Only these animals will be allowed to be traded in the future. And that's in draft form. And it includes things, you know, like quail and pheasant and things like that, that we, you know, sell all over the world as game animals. But it doesn't include things like the pangolins or the civet cats or bats and these things that are very high risk for disease transmission. So we're hopeful when this law is finally passed, there will be a smaller list of animals that can be traded, mainly kind of semi-domesticated species that are there, and that the wildlife trade will basically close down.
And so right now, because I keep seeing, people keep saying, hey, I thought this was banned and it's not. It's just the regular wet markets that they're showing pictures of. Is that?
That's right. And you know, and there you can see them in Hong Kong and many places in the world. You can see these markets where the chicken's alive and people have the chicken and they take the whole chicken or they have it slaughtered in front of them so they know it's fresh. And that has its own issues. It has its own hygiene issues for sure, but it's not necessarily risking any new disease coming into the system. So that is going to continue around the world. What we're trying to do is ask governments around the world to stop the wildlife elements that bring in this risk of disease transmission, and particularly animals like bats. Primates in Africa are a problem, monkeys and things like that. Obviously, with something like a monkey or an ape, you've got a much higher disease transmission risk because they're so much closer to us genetically. I mean, a leap from a chimpanzee to a human being is not a very big division. And so that sort of stuff has to be stopped. But, and you're also not going to be able to stop people in the bush, literally in the forest, going and killing animals and eating them. That's just part of their subsistence, and that's not going to stop. What you need to stop is the commercial trade, the bringing of species together, the shipping them into urban centers. You know, these are all high risk factors you're adding to the problem. And so we're hoping around the world that governments, not just in Asia, but also in Africa, will take this warning and really severely restrict that activity and you know, really make sure if animals, wild animals are going to be used, then they're not at any risk, they're not mixed together, they're not stressed out. I mean, keeping the animals alive for extended period also, you know, they become dehydrated, malnourished, they're stressed, and that's when they become real shedders of the virus and things like that. So that all needs to stop.
And so China, though, they're taking it pretty seriously. Like, this is real change.
They are. I mean, unfortunately, with some of the blaming that's been going on, they've become a bit defensive over this. And, you know, the law is going forward in draft. It'll probably not be passed until the National People's Congress can convene, but it should revolutionize the way they approach it. And on this list, cats and dogs were not on this list either, which, you know, it may be that they use this opportunity to take that off the menus as well, which obviously would be a good thing.
And what about Vietnam? What are they doing?
So Vietnam, we're waiting over the next couple of weeks. They took action very quickly. We did a lot of work in Vietnam around rhino horn consumption. And through the rhino horn issue, I think the government in Vietnam became much more aware of wildlife issues. Before that, they were largely ambivalent to the whole thing, but they've been doing a lot more seizures of ivory and things like that, and they've had the new law in. And so they've been taking it a lot more seriously, and the government immediately reached out to NGOs and other interested parties for, what do we do? How do we stop this? The problem there is not so much the wet markets, it's restaurants, wildlife restaurants. So people go to restaurants, the animals will be in cages, you select your animal, it's prepared for you. And we think the same thing's going to happen there, where they're going to radically reduce that and somewhat change the attitude from seeing wildlife as like this commodity to be sort of exploited to seeing it as something we need to conserve. And obviously, this is part of the cultural change that's going on, is that historically, it's been seen in a very utilitarian way. We have to consume it. We have to breed it. We have to make more of them. Now people are valuing nature for nature's sake more and saying, no, we want to keep these animals and they're all endangered. So it's part of a transition that's been happening in Asia over the last couple of decades.
A lot of the work you have done, WildAid's done, I mean, this has all been going in this direction anyway. This is just kind of the...
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the most fulfilling things for me that came out of this horrible mess was that the reaction from the Chinese public, particularly the urban and younger generations, was like, we got to stop wildlife trade. This is ridiculous. Why are we still doing this? And that using our slogan, which is basically no trading, no killing, to say, this is time to stop. This is, you know, one comment was, we need to civilize our diet. And that was from a Chinese person saying that. We've seen an 80% reduction in shark fin imports to China. The price of ivory and rhino horn has gone down by 2/3. You know, we've seen people already moving very strongly in the right direction, led by people like Yao Ming, Jackie Chan. All these influencers are all like, no, we want to value wildlife for its own sake, not to exploit it. And so this is very much in the line of where things are going. The big difference, I think, is that the government agencies in charge of this were all about exploitation. I mean, basically, it's the forestry ministry. And the forestry ministry was all about originally cutting down trees. That was what it did. And then a few years ago, China reversed that and said, hey, we're having problems with flooding. We need to start planting trees, not cutting them down. And that ministry had to do a complete 180 to becoming conservators rather than exploiters. And we think the same thing's going on with wildlife. So instead of having to meet quotas of production of these animals, still now it's going to be like, how good a job are you doing at protecting and making sure these animals aren't being traded? So this is part of an evolution that's been sped up by this. And we do see, we hope the minor silver lining to this horrible cloud over the world is that our attitudes to wildlife in different places are going to move on, you know, into the future, valuing nature for its own sake and for the value it does, and basically keeping us safe. And if you mess around with it, then we've seen the awful, awful consequences.
Absolutely. And what about here? We have wild animal markets in New York and California. Yeah. And so what's going on with them?
Well, and the exotic pet trade. I mean, there's not as many markets, obviously, and most animals tend to be sort of slaughtered on site and brought to the market prepared, which is obviously much less risk of a disease transmission. But there have been some, and we've had problems in the past with some of these markets where, you know, not just in disease, but also invasive species, people selling things like little turtles, you know, for food, which then can escape and become invasive species here. So it's not just the disease risk, there's other risks. And there's also the risk of transmission of disease to domesticated animals. So when I was working on the pet trade and parrots, there was something called Newcastle's disease, which could be transmitted from a parrot brought in to chickens. And then had in one case, 12 million chickens had to be euthanized. So there's all kinds of disease risks with wildlife trade. And here we do have less of the sort of exotic meat market, but there is more certainly exotic pet market.
Yes.
And so, you know, parrots and reptiles can bring in parasites and ticks and possibly disease too. So that's something which probably needs more of a closer look.
And so, because WildAid, your campaigns have been incredibly successful, will you just talk a little bit about your campaigns and how they work and the kind of success that they've really achieved? Because it's phenomenal.
Well, it's very much been partnership, because whether it's our spokespeople like Jackie Chan, who we worked with for 20 years, or Yao Ming, who's just been brilliant on the ivory and the shark fin campaign. But it's also been the Chinese government, you know, so the Chinese government has provided up to $200 million worth of media space a year. So these campaigns use very high production values, you know, CGI bullets, all kinds of special effects to try and make them engaging and entertaining. We have absolutely top line ambassadors like Yao and Jackie. And then the media has been largely donated by Chinese media. So that's what's given it the scale. So, you know, when people think about NGO campaigns and think about a few posters or something like that, these are like billboards all over the cities. It's on primetime television, there's social media. They're really huge campaigns. And as I said, last year we had $220 million worth of media space that was given to us. So they've been able to be very pervasive. They're all over the place with all kinds of different celebrities, from Prince William to, you know, David Beckham, all these different international characters, as well as local Chinese, of course. And we've been using the same slogan now for, well, since 2006 in China. So the slogan is basically become a mantra. People almost cite it as if it's some Confucian saying. But when people talk about conservation, they say, I'll try and slaughter it, meo mai mai chu meo sha hai, which means no trading, no killing. And people just cite that. Everybody knows it. And so it's been very, very powerful. And a lot of attitudes have changed, which is really wonderful to see.
And with ivory, with rhino horn, the numbers are astonishing compared to what they were.
Yeah, well, you know, all things being equal, those numbers would have been going up significantly as the economies have got bigger, then the numbers would have been going up to actually bring them down significantly. And obviously China banned ivory trade a few years ago. President Xi did that. That had a huge impact. But when he banned it, we'd already had our campaigns going out with Yao Ming. So when it was banned, people understood why it was being banned, and there was tremendous support. One survey we did was 95% of people in Beijing, Shanghai, and Guangzhou were in favor of the ban. So this wasn't something which was being imposed that was unpopular. It already had the understanding and popularity. And what we hope to do working with the Chinese government is around this issue is also get that message out there that here's the reasons why the government's taking this action and you all need to be supportive. And I think one big hope for this is people always say, well, will they enforce it? And actually the Chinese government, when they get serious about things, really enforce things well. We've just done a massive campaign with Chinese customs there and they've done an excellent job. And they even tuned their scanners, security scanners at the airport to detect ivory. And they were picking up people with like one bangle, you know, going through the checkups. And so they did an incredible job on that. But a lot of this is going to be policed by the public. You know, in the days of social media now, if these things are on sale, then people can take a photo on their phone and post it to social media, and then the authorities can react around that. So, you know, we think that's going to be really important, and particularly the younger generation. We've seen the economic costs, never mind the human lives have been lost to this. And this is really economic sabotage that's taking place if you're engaging in these practices.
That's incredible about the bracelets and the scanners.
Yeah, just amazing. And people's bags, and they go through because they can train the density. So it comes up as a specific color as it goes through the scanners. And they just, you know, for 3 months, they just had this massive crackdown. They caught loads of people and publicized it. Every single entry point to China had posters with a celebrity dressed as a customs officer holding an ivory saying, this is contraband. And when I went through Beijing Airport, there was 25 of these billboards before you got to the customs. So by the time you got to customs, you're carrying ivory, like, oh my God, these guys are so on me. So, you know, when the Chinese government wants to do something, they can be very, very effective.
And what about trafficking in countries in Africa with what's happening right now? Is there going to be any major changes?
Well, the big, big concern is with the tourism industry down is that, first of all, causes economic hardship and people are out of their jobs. But it also means there's not people around everywhere in the parks and reserves. So normally you have all the staff from the lodges going backwards and forwards to work. You have all the guides. You have all the tourists out there. There's lots of people milling around to make sure that nobody's poaching. And so that's not happening anymore. And so there is a big concern that the poaching will go up because there's not as much surveillance. And also economic hardship. I mean, you know, we have it relatively easy. I mean, being stuck at home is not the best thing, but, you know, economically, we're relatively well off. I mean, people in Africa literally will not be able to feed themselves if they can't get out and do things. And so there's going to be very desperate people, and some people are likely to turn to poaching, sadly.
And so this pandemic obviously has been a huge wake up to the whole world for so many reasons. But with the wildlife trade and trafficking, it's like all the alarms are going off right now. And how do you see like the world can get behind your work, what's happening, and people can actually participate in helping push this change forward?
Well, a lot of it's about education and awareness. And then most of the governments we think will be reacting pretty positively. And our attitude with China has tended to be, you know, no point crying over spilt milk. It's no good looking over your shoulder. You need to look for the future and what's going to happen. And when governments take action, let's encourage them. Let's say, well done, great, you're on it. You know, Malawi, for example, has banned bushmeat trade there right now. And so I think encouragement at this point is better than critique. I mean, people know what the issues are. They know what the problems are. Now let's move forward and let's try and solve some of these things. And what we're hopeful is that some governments like China and Vietnam can set up kind of model responses to this where they deal with all the issues. And in some cases, it needs new laws. In some cases, it needs greater penalties. You know, some of the penalties in some countries are just meaningless. And so that needs to go up. This is obviously now a crime with a massive cost to the world. And then it needs enforcement. And then it needs public awareness. And so governments should be engaging in all those different fields simultaneously. And whatever people can do to support it would be great. I think also in Africa, you know, with this crisis, many of the anti-poaching efforts rely on tourism money to support them financially. So if anybody can support anti-poaching on the ground in Africa, that's very positive. And finally, you know, people say to me sometimes, what can we do if we want to help elephants and things? And I say, well, go to Africa and see elephants, put money into those African economies, create jobs. And that is going to incentivize the government and people to conserve those animals. So hopefully when this all dies down, people can get back. I mean, all the safaris have obviously been cancelled right now. But when that opens up, I would encourage people to go and go to Africa and spend money on the ground there and help support people, livelihoods, and the wildlife. If you haven't done it, then, you know, it should be on your bucket list, because it's nothing more, I don't think, more peaceful and more beautiful than sitting next to a herd of elephants doing their thing. And after all this craziness, maybe we need to reconnect with nature a little bit more.
We absolutely do. And so for going forward then right now with Wild Aid, this is your biggest focus, is pushing all these agendas.
Well, we were focused on pangolins before this. You noted that, you know, we also have a great ad with Jackie Chan teaching pangolins to do kung fu to protect themselves from poachers, which was a lot of fun. So our pangolin, it really is an extension of our pangolin campaign. So we're reaching out in Asia to ask people not to eat pangolins, also in Africa, obviously looking at other species. But it's really, you know, our slogan in Africa is poaching steals from us all. And originally we were talking about the loss of wildlife and loss of tourism. Now, obviously, you know, it's the loss of entire economies based on poaching and illegal activity.
There's still people who don't know what pangolins are and are very confused by what they are. Can you just give a little description?
So pangolins are the only scaled mammal. They have scales, almost like a dragon, which are actually made of keratin, which is the same thing as rhino horn and hair and fingernails are made of. And they're anteaters. They have great big long tongues for getting ants. They're very shy. They live on their own. They're nocturnal. And most people in Africa have never seen a pangolin in their lives. Even people who are guides in safari camps have never seen pangolins, because they're very evasive. But they are being hunted, usually using dogs to find their burrows and digging them out. And they're used for their meat, and also for their scales are used in traditional Chinese medicine, something which is outlawed now, but is still going on in parts of China. So we hope they will act on that as well, because obviously having the byproduct of the scales encourages the capture for meat as well. But they're the most trafficked mammal in the world. There's four species in Asia which are highly endangered, and four in Africa which are now being heavily exploited. A couple of weeks ago, we had, I think it was 8.2 tons of pangolin scales seized in Malaysia. And, you know, these are not big animals, and these scales are very light. So 8.2 tons is thousands of pangolins.
And that's recent, like since this has all been
The shipment probably left before the virus hit, but it was right in the middle of the outbreak. So this is still going on. In November, I was in Nigeria with the actor Jaimin Hunsu, and we were filming in markets there where people were selling pangolins. And we actually went with a vet that rescued seven pangolins, which we were able to release. But, you know, it's going on all over the place. And, you know, they carry both parasites like ticks, but they also have been found to have viruses in them. And there was a virus similar to coronavirus that was found in China. And so the speculation has been that it was the transmitted from a bat to the pangolin to people. Last time with SARS, it was bats to civet cats to humans. So there's usually like a transmitter species between the bats and the humans, but the bats are heavy virus carriers. And of course, if you leave them alone, it's all fine. But if you take them out and you mix them together and they're in cages above other animals, I mean, the diseases can just spread.
And what happens if we don't do anything? And what this is just going to keep happening. And the next one.
Absolutely. It's just, you know, I mean, we're calling our sort of campaigns like preventing the next epidemic, because you look back and there's a history, whether it's, you know, HIV is believed to have been derived from so AIDS from SIV, simian immune virus, which went from monkeys to chimpanzees, which ate the monkeys, to human beings butchering chimpanzees for the bushmeat trade. And that was the origin of the whole AIDS crisis. You know, there's things like monkeypox, which was transmitted as an outbreak in the United States, which came from Gambian rats, which had been imported as pets, which then infected prairie dogs, which were being kept as pets as well, and then got into human beings. So, you know, there's just a whole long list of viruses which are out there. I think a lot of people don't realize that I think it's like more than 70% of fatal diseases of humans originated in animals. And most of those came to us when we domesticated animals. So we got a lot of things from pigs and cows and chickens when we domesticated them, we're in close proximity. But the most likely source of new disease is going to be from another animal. You know, we have no immunity to it because it's been in another animal that's transmitted. And so if we don't do anything about this, it's really a question of when, you know, the next thing happens.
Right. And it could be
It could be way worse than this. It could be way worse than this. You know, this is obviously infectious, but and a nasty disease. But things like Ebola and Marburg are just absolutely horrendous. Something out of a horror movie. And these things are out there.
And what can people do to get behind WildAid and support your efforts?
Well, please, you know, go to the website and join up and sign into our newsletters and things. We will try to keep people informed as all the new information comes out, you know, on what the latest theories are and what's going on in countries. And we're asking people to sort of help and as I say, encourage governments. We think at this point, you know, critiquing is not the right way to go. You know, we need to just, when people do things good, say, hey, that's the way to go, guys. Well done. And try and encourage countries to follow the leaders. And I think we're seeing that now with the disease spread. Certain countries have dealt with this so much better, and there's lessons that we can learn from it. And then we'll stay in touch with us through our social media channels and signing up for the newsletter.
Thank you, Peter, so much.
Thank you.
To learn more about WildAid and to get behind their work, go to their website. It's wildaid.org. And while you're there, watch some of their campaigns or watch all of their campaigns. They're absolutely incredible. Our website is speciesunite.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. And if you'd like to support the podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. You can do so in one of two ways. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And we're also on Patreon. It's patreon.com/speciesunite. I would like to thank everybody at Species Unite, including Gary Knutson, Natalie Martin, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you and have a wonderful day.